Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions. That's right. We've got listener questions and we're going to provide some answers. We're going to pipe those answers right through your earbuds, into your ears, into your brains, straight down into your hearts.
Hey, maybe we're going straight through bone conduction if you're using aftershocks like I do.
It's been a minute since we've talked about those. Are you still enjoying those bone conduction headphones?
I love them. I was just trying to convince your wife to get some the other day.
I think it would be a good product for her because her ears are so small that any earbud she tries to use, it hurts because
she's got the ears of a toddler.
She kind of does. they're really small, and I have the opposite. Like my ear holes, what I like to call the front porch of your ear. You know, like it's like that little area outside of your ear that can like hold an earbud. On mine, dude, it's huge. Like I can't hardly find an earbud that I can use because they all just kind of just fall out of my ear, you know. Like that's why I like the in-ear headphones that kind of plug into your ear canal.
Yeah, I still just don't like.
Plus, you get the bass
putting the stuff in my ear, so I either like over the ear or I like the aftershocks, and maybe they'll work for your wife. But
a little tangent for folks, but yes, we do have listener questions this episode, and I'm looking forward to getting to some of these questions. Man, we're going to answer one about taking time off to spend some time with your baby. You know, taking time away from work, saying no to money in order to value some of that time. Some things to consider there.
We like money, but we like some things more than the money, like our babies.
Absolutely. And we're also going to take a question too as to whether or not a HELOC is going to be the right decision or the right product for this couple. And we're also going to answer a question about spending money on preparing for emergencies, not like an emergency fund, but like literal prepping. So we're looking forward to getting to that one, plus a couple others. But Joel, before we get to our questions, I wanted to tell you about, I don't know if you've ever seen this part of my driveway, but there's a section of the driveway that was cut and removed when we were building out the basement here. And for a while, it's bothered me. And finally, I was like, you know what? I want that fixed. There had been dirt there, and it's right at the bottom of the steps, so the girls kind of track the mud and dirt. You know, they take it up the steps. You know, in the end, I was like, okay, this needs to be fixed. And I also knew that this isn't something I've ever done before, like pouring concrete, like pouring a slab. I mean, this isn't a massive slab or anything. It's actually pretty small, but it's not something I've ever done myself. I was a little intimidated. Even just the idea of doing it kind of overwhelmed me, but I thought, you know what, dude? This is something I can do. I read the instructions. I watched a YouTube video, and then I went for it, and you know what? Dude, it turned out really, really well.
Nice.
I was really proud of myself. I've never done any concrete work because I'm not a concrete guy, but I am now. But this reminds me, it makes me think of a lot of the things we encounter in our life, how we think, well, that's just not what I do. Like, I don't do that professionally, or I don't know anything about that. But there are so many things in our lives, like our personal finances, that were we to just go for it, were we to just try it, and you know, when the stakes are relatively low, it's something that we can figure out ourselves. And in the end, we're thinking to ourselves, was it really that easy? You know, like it's something that we've built up in our minds as being this kind of overwhelming thing, but in reality, it's not all that hard.
Yeah, and YouTube, of course, can help provide some instant expertise, which it helped you out in this situation. But yeah, I completely agree. I think there's so many more things in our lives that we should be saying yes to, that we should be giving a shot. I don't know, that's the case for me too, man. I get intimidated by different projects around the house. And sometimes I just avoid them, sometimes for years. But when I actually finally get around to doing something that I was previously scared of, like replacing a toilet or whatever, I'm like, oh, wait, that wasn't that bad. Like, it's.
And now you're a toilet replacer.
Right.
Like, it's on your resume.
Yeah, exactly. And people like instantly hire me when they see that for any job I'm applying for. It's amazing.
Book him now.
Yeah. But it's those kind of things where I always do think after I do it, wow, that was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. And I'm surprised that I let it be this like mental roadblock for so long.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It really is mental because I feel like oftentimes when I find myself in those situations and I actually take steps to getting the thing done, it's because I haven't overthought it. You know, like when I sit there and I overanalyze, it just slows me down. And oftentimes it means I don't do something. So I guess I wanted to share that because, I mean, that's our goal for the show. I mean, it's one of the reasons we started the show because we want to essentially like demystify these conversations surrounding our money. It's like, oh, retirement is really that simple. It's like these two simple steps and that's all it takes for me to start saving towards my retirement. Cool. Those are the kind of conversations that we have. And those are the kind of breakthroughs that I think we want our listeners to have when they realize in reality, this is way easier than I thought.
Now you're starting to sound like Tony Robbins with your breakthrough talk over there.
We all know that you've got that Tony Robbins like life-size poster on the back of your door.
Plus the bumper sticker.
Got to be like Tony.
Just got to let everybody know. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know much about Tony Robbins. But all right, Matt, let's move on and let's mention the beer that we're having on today's show. This one is called Baked Goods. It's a blueberry lemon cobbler sour beer by Atlanta Brewing Company. The kind folks over there tossed this beer our way. We're looking forward to sharing it on today's episode. But for now, Matt, let's get on to the topic at hand. We're answering listener questions. And for anybody out there listening who's like, man, I would love to have Matt and Joel tackle my money question, well, we'd love to hear it. Just go to our website, howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple instructions there for you to be able to submit your question, and hopefully we can tackle it on an upcoming episode. But let's get to that first one of the show, Matt. And this one is about, should you quit work for a little while in order to spend time with your young children?
Hey guys, Kyle from Marietta here. I appreciate you taking my question. My wife and I both work and recently had our first child, a son, in December. Naturally, COVID-19 has created some interesting dynamics with kids, especially from a financial perspective. If we wanted to, we could live off my income, but it would be a trade-off, mainly with retirement savings. With the latest coronavirus bill being passed, we have two options we're considering, and we wanted some advice, mainly to make sure we're considering everything. So our question is, should we both continue to work through this year, or should one of us take 6 months off so we could qualify for the stimulus as well as the increased child care credit? The difference between the two decisions is roughly $13,000. However, we would both be able to be home with our son for half of the year. A little more background. We're both 33 this year. I currently work from home and will likely work from home for a good chunk of this year. My wife does go into an office currently 4 days a week. So if she takes 6 months off to stay with our child, we will both be home and we can forgo daycare. Yay. All of our bills will be covered without changing our budget on either decision. We will save around 24% of our gross income in retirement. That's 401ks and IRAs, as well as our HSA, regardless of which choice we make. However, if one of us chooses to take 6 months off, we will save $6,000 less for retirement, and that's included in the $13,000 I stated earlier. We will also be saving for our son's college in a 529. We love our son, and we want to spend as much time with him as possible, as we know life has a habit of taking up our time. We also recognize this could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and we're extremely lucky. Are we missing anything? Should we be considering anything else? Also, we're more wine drinkers these days, but yeah, if you haven't tried White Rascal by Avery Brewing in Boulder, Colorado, I highly recommend.
Matt, that's a great question from Kyle. You know what my favorite thing he said was when he asked this question?
What's that?
Life has a habit of taking up our time.
He did say that, yeah.
That feels like meta existential almost.
I thought you were going to say that your favorite part was the fact that he had a beer recommendation for us.
I do like beer.
Actually, so we've had a lot of Avery beers on the show before, but White Rascal, it's one I've seen before. Like, I can picture the label on the shelves at our local package store, but it's not one I've had. But it's I know it's a Belgian wit, which is why it's called White Rascal.
Yeah, I do love Avery beer. So Kyle, we'll definitely pick that up next time we see it. Can't believe we haven't given that one a shot yet. By the way, Kyle is from my old stomping grounds, just a half hour north of where we live here in Atlanta, Matt. And, you know, it's where I went to high school, middle school, elementary school. Like,
Spent my whole life. Up there in Marietta, home of the Big Chicken. I feel like that's kind of like Marietta's claim to fame.
That is the calling card.
I don't think we've ever talked about it before.
We should post a picture of the Big Chicken
on
our Instagram.
It's like a three-story building that was built in the shape of a chicken. And it's a KFC building that was built in like the 50s, right?
And I remember when I was in like middle school or high school, they were redoing the Big Chicken.
Oh, yeah?
It was like
a Save the Big Chicken movement.
Well, and they had like two options, and so people were divided against which one like we should go with, and yeah, it was a thing.
Local hometown drama.
Exactly. And let's get to Kyle's question. Kyle, the fact that you'd only be losing $13,000 to be able to both be off with your son for half a year, that sounds pretty excellent, I think. Mm-hmm. And Matt, I'm personally in favor, I know you are too, of unconventional choices that cost you money if you've saved well and you've thought through the potential pitfalls of making that choice. I mean, it just reminds me, I basically quit my first job in radio 6 months after taking the job in order to take a road trip around the country. And it's one of those things where a lot of people, my parents included, were like, that's not a good idea. And it's still actually one of the best things I've ever done to take that time off. And because one, didn't really love the job. I was waking up early, like way too early, like 3:30 a.m. every morning, and
that's
I wasn't
insane.
Into it.
Yeah.
And actually, interestingly enough, like 2 weeks after I left, they ended up letting a lot of people go, and I probably would have lost my job anyway. Mm. And so it's one of those things where I made a decision, kind of a bold decision, but I also had like a lot less to lose at that point in time, right? I was early 20s, wasn't married, didn't have any kids. And so it was an easier decision, but it still, you know, wasn't an easy one. And there were a lot of people telling me not to do it.
Yeah. But, you know, Kyle, for y'all specifically, you know, this seems like a great opportunity. You know, that added stimulus money, the child care credit, this is a huge reason we think to jump on this. You know, it's not often that life hands you free money essentially like this. Granted, you know, over time, we're gonna have to pay that back in taxes. Price is not truly free. But, you know, for you to be able to step back and take a mini retirement like this is great. And for folks like you who are in a good financial position, that's exactly what this latest bill has done. And it's what it's going to allow for you to do if you decide to go that route. And in general, we feel that mini retirements are a great approach that far too few people consider. You know, so instead of like investing and working tirelessly so that you can spend money once you are 65 or once you're 70 years old, taking like a month or two or even six, maybe a few different times along the way, say for the birth of your first son. Congrats on that, by the way. This can be an awesome approach. Our buddy Coach Carson has a great post on this that we'll link to in our show notes. But essentially, what this sort of does as well is it kind of gets you in the practice of not always saying yes to the money. It's sort of like a muscle, you know? Just because the money is there doesn't necessarily mean that you should say yes to it and accept it, especially when you're trading it for something that you might value even more than that money, like some of this valuable time with your new son.
Most definitely, man. And I think, too, you do have to think about the career implications of a move like this. And that doesn't mean that you don't do this. I think you probably still do it. But another big consideration is what it's going to look like to get work on the flip side of this break. If you work in an industry where things are changing quickly, taking 6 months off might mean that you're not nearly as valuable because you won't be up to speed on the latest trends and innovations. But that's not the case for other jobs where technology isn't changing as rapidly, right? So part of your decision should really come down to the confidence that you'll be able to re-enter the job market 6 months from now based on your skills and your network before you end up hitting pause. Because an intentional 6 month break could lead to maybe like an unintentional 9, 10, 11, 12 month break. And then can you handle that too? And again, it sounds like you've got good savings. You've been intentional with your money and you probably could handle, you know, some extra additional unintentional time off. But you want to be prepared in advance and be thinking about what it looks like to go back to work after that break.
That's right. And Kyle, you said too that the total difference in income might be around $13,000. You know, who's to say that your wife wouldn't think up of like a new dream job scenario while she's at home? You know, like during those 6 months, she could maybe start consulting or think of something entirely new or different. And, you know, maybe she doesn't make a ton now and that would still allow you to kind of take advantage of some of the recent laws that have passed. But maybe by next year, you know, she could be making a good amount of money. Maybe she could even supplant her former salary. And so in that case, we would say, go for it, take the break. You know, this is something that you might have even done regardless of the change in the laws. But, you know, given that recent legislation, it makes the decision even easier to say yes to.
Yeah, man, I feel like oftentimes we pack our lives so full with things to do, work included, work especially. And so our brains just don't have the free time to think about what life could look like apart from work. Like, could we launch our own business? Could we start a side hustle or start consulting? And that's kind of actually been one of the interesting things that we've talked about too, Matt, is that a lot of entrepreneurs have started their own budding business in times of COVID. And this could be you know, a similar move, Kyle, for your wife, if she's able to be home. Y'all are able to be home together. How wonderful does that sound? And it could also offer the mental flexibility to dream about even bigger and better things on the horizon, including new work opportunities.
Yeah, Kyle's wife could be the CEO of the next new startup focused on like the baby industry.
Well, there's a lot of money to be had in that one.
There is. I think there's a better term for that. But, you know, generally speaking, the baby industry.
Catering to the children. All right. Well, Kyle, best of luck to you and your family as you embark on this time off. We hope it's a really, really good time for you guys. And Matt, we got more questions to get to. We'll get to those, including one about HELOCs versus home equity loans. We'll get to those right after this break.
All right, we are back from the break. And before we get to that question about whether or not a HELOC makes sense, let's hear from a listener who has just started investing and has a question about his Roth IRA.
Hey, what's up, How To Money? My name is Preston and I'm based out of San Antonio, Texas. So I recently opened up a Fidelity account along with a Roth IRA inside Fidelity. I am 20 years old and I cannot afford to throw in $6,000 right off the bat. So I came up with a method to where I throw in $115 a week into this Roth IRA, and it will equivalent to $6,000 by the end of the 52-week period. And with all that being said, I'm curious as to if I will gain the same amount of interest on my Roth IRA as someone who can afford to throw in $6,000 right off the bat. I also have one more question. I'm so sorry. Can I open up another Roth IRA account? Granted, I can't even afford one, but there might be another listener out there who is also curious about this. So I'm going to leave y'all with all that. Thank y'all so much. Y'all are great. I love y'all's little system y'all got set up here to where I can easily ask a question. This is great. Thanks again, guys.
Man, I got to say, Preston's already been doing a great job listening because he opened his Roth IRA at Fidelity.
And age 20 to boot.
Right. That's impressive,
that's
dude.
Great.
So congrats, Preston. I love, too, how you already boiled it down to $115 a week, and you can hit that $6,000 limit over the course of the year. That's fantastic. And, you know, to be able to max out your Roth at the age of 20 is a really big deal because it means you won't have to dedicate nearly as much of your earnings towards investing later on in life if you do it well in your 20s and 30s. There are a lot of folks at your age who don't even know what a Roth IRA is, much less how to open one or put money in it. So yeah, big props, Preston. But let's get into some of the specifics of your question. You're basically asking whether or not it's better to invest in a lump sum on January 1st instead of dollar cost averaging over 52 weeks. And we would say that basically that's your only option right now, right? If you don't have the cash on hand and you need to spread it out by putting in $115 every week, well, that gets things taken care of. But if you are able at some point in the future to fully fund that Roth in one fell swoop on January 1st, well, it's not a bad idea to go ahead and do that and get it taken care of as early in the year as you possibly can. And that's because the market goes up on average 2 out of every 3 years. Getting money in as early as possible means that there's a greater likelihood that the money you're putting in is going to make money. And that info is based on research by Vanguard. We'll put a link to that Vanguard study in the show notes. But man, it's crazy. I finally, for the first time, opened up 529 plans for my kids last year. And I went in there and I looked, and they had already had hundreds and hundreds of dollars of gains. And I was just wowed at the process, right? Like, I knew exactly how much I put in. I'm not putting in a recurring amount every single month, and just to see, like, okay, wow, they're already worth, you know, a decent bit more. Just, I mean, it makes you feel good.
Yeah, you've got that 529 plan money invested in Bitcoin, right?
Exactly. I don't even think that's an option, but...
No, yeah, it's not.
I hope they never make it an option.
But Preston, you know, we want you to... Essentially, we don't want you to sweat the fact that you don't have your $6,000 saved up by January 1st, right? You know, if you can work towards that, then that's a great thing. I mean, essentially, that's what I do. Or, I mean, every single month, instead of... I don't do it every week, but once a month, I set aside $500 so that it is ready to go at the beginning of the next year. But truly, I'm only like 1 year ahead of you here. And so if you can kind of look at it through that lens, hopefully if that is a goal of yours, that's something you can work towards. But the far bigger deal here is consistently getting that $6,000 in each and every single year, right? It doesn't help to obsess over when you're going to get that cash in, even though, you know, the optimal thing is to get it in a little bit sooner. But it truly doesn't matter all that much. There's a lot of folks who are fans of dollar cost averaging, and they'll note that, you know, when you do that, it helps you to avoid some of the short-term losses, you know, so there is an emotional benefit of not freaking out if the market, you know, hits some turbulence right after you make that investment. But again, the difference between dollar cost averaging versus lump sum investing, it's not a huge difference. You're looking at, like, within that Vanguard study, it's only a difference of about 2.3%. And so we're not talking about the difference of like 10%, 15%, something that would, you know, make a massive difference in your ability to grow your money over the future. It's something to work towards. Like, who, you know, do you want to have an extra 2.3% based on historical returns? Sure. But yeah. It's not a big enough deal to kind of beat yourself up over.
Yeah, man. What you just said kind of makes me think about somebody with a great credit score. Let's say they're at like 780 and they really, really want their credit score to be perfect, like 850. And it's possible, right? You could work really, really hard.
And you might see some benefits from that as well.
Yeah. And it's not a bad idea to try to work as hard as you can to make your credit score excellent, right? But I also think once you're at 780, you're golden, and that credit score is going to take you really far in life. And the difference between 780 and 850 is minimal in how it actually improves your life. And so I think it's the same thing here. It's like, is lump sum investing on January 1st the best thing mathematically? Yes. But if the dollar cost averaging is going to help you stick with it and help you behaviorally, then I think dollar cost averaging is great too. So I'm all about that. Also, too, Preston asked about opening multiple Roth accounts. Well, Preston, you could technically have a Roth IRA with multiple brokerage houses. There's nothing wrong with that. But the $6,000 total limit doesn't change. That's the amount that you can put into any and all Roth accounts as set by the IRS. So you could drop like $2,000 into Vanguard, $2,000 into Fidelity, and $2,000 with M1. But it's easier to pick one of the low-cost greats and keep as much as you can with just a single one. We would say that's best for simplicity. It's not like you can put $6,000 every year into each one of those. That's going to go against IRS guidelines. You'll be doing something illegal at that point.
That's right. And of course, you want to be a law-abiding citizen. So Preston, thanks so much for that question. And dude, keep up the good work. Joel, our next question, interestingly, has to do with a garage. Let's hear it.
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is Kirby from Havre, Montana. I have a question for y'all regarding setting up a HELOC for some home improvements. My husband and I have about $6,000 in debt that we'll have paid off by June at the very latest. This is aside from the mortgage on our duplex that we currently live in. We have about 25% equity in the property. I just refinanced in December, and I decided to forego the cash out refi option just due to the low interest rate that I received without it. We need about $8,000 to $10,000 to finish the garage that my husband needs to continue running his detailing business, along with a new fence. Due to the work involved, everything essentially has to be done at the same time. We could have this money saved up by the end of the summer, but getting extensive outdoor work done in the fall is kind of a gamble in Montana. The weather doesn't like to cooperate when you want it to. Also, the improvements to the garage would include insulation and heat, which would be essential for my husband's business and his hobbies in the winter. So my question is, would getting a HELOC or a home equity loan while still in debt be irresponsible? And if not, which one better suits this situation? And what would you suggest looking for in a lender as far as rates and fees? Thank you all for your advice.
Hey, Kirby, thanks for that question. And we are glad to hear that you're able to lock in a low interest rate during like what might be the lowest rates we will see in our lifetime, right? And by the way, too, she mentioned that they are in a duplex, which means they're house hacking, right? When you're in a duplex, that means you're living in half of it and you've got tenants in the other half. Hopefully they're paying most, if not all, of the mortgage. So Kirby, good job there.
House hacking rocks.
Yeah, yeah. So so taking out a HELOC makes sense here in order to pull that off quickly and to tackle that project now, you know, given that rough Montana weather. We think that's a good idea if your husband is committed to the detailing business and, you know, you're not using the business as an excuse for kind of making an upgrade to the house. And so, yeah, we're cool with the HELOC if it's allowing you to make money elsewhere. This is something where you kind of need to have an honest conversation with yourself, something to kind of consider and keep in mind, because we don't want you, you know, spending money on lifestyle and consumption under the guise of, oh, no, we're doing this for the business. It's like, okay, because I mentioned that because she's kind of slid in the hobbies thing in there. You know, she's like, this is going to be good for my husband's business and hobbies. And we're all for, you know, pursuing hobbies, but we want to make sure that you're doing it in a responsible way, that you're not financing your hobbies, and that truly what you're doing here is kind of increasing a way for you to make money. Because, you know, you're talking about heating the garage, like, you could put a couple heaters in there, and heaters don't cost, you know, $8,000 to $10,000.
But, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, too, though, at least Kirby wasn't like, eh, we might take like a vacation to Cancun.
Tahiti is also nice, right? during the winters of Montana.
Maybe we'll take two vacations. Like, that's sometimes, I think, where a lot of people, especially with rates this low, they're maybe considering taking money out in order to take a nicer trip or to fund some of that lifestyle spending like you were talking about, Matt. But Kirby and her partner, it sounds like, are looking to do just improvements to the home, and that is the perfect use for a home equity line of credit or a home equity loan. if you can afford it, right?
Yeah, it sounds like they're being smart about it. And given to the fact that they've got some debt, but they've got a plan to have that paid off. She said, like, at, you know, by June at the latest. Like, it sounds like they are on the ball. They've got right. things figured out. They've got a plan. So it doesn't necessarily look like they're going to be the ones to kind of inflate their lifestyle, you know, with this HELOC.
Right. And so, Kirby, on that note, we would say one of the really important things in this is to find the right lender. So we would suggest getting quotes from a few different institutions, including a local credit union or two. We like credit unions a whole lot. We've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. And last time I went looking for a HELOC, though, Matt, the rate I found was best was being offered by a regional bank. They had the best offer around, and they had a great intro rate. So basically, like, I could get a lower interest rate for, I forget if it was 6 months or a year. And at the same time, I wasn't charged a dime in closing costs for getting that loan. And those costs can vary widely between different lenders and kind of what promotions that they're offering at the time. But Kirby, I would suggest researching rates and check for introductory offers that could sweeten the deal. And this is actually a chance too for, as you're getting these quotes, to go back to an institution whose offer was just okay and be like, well, I'm getting this over here and I'd love to go with you guys. Can you match it? Can you beat it? And you can kind of pit lenders against each other. You can totally ask for a discount and ask for fees to be waived in order to score yourself a better deal on this HELOC or home equity loan.
Yeah, well, on that note, fees are essentially everything here, right? There are going to be different fees or penalties that a lender might charge, and so that's something to be aware of. Like, some lenders won't charge you any closing costs if you keep that HELOC active for a certain number of years. You don't even have to take any money out. You just can't close it down. Inactivity fees are something else you want to be aware of. You know, so if the lender wants to charge you for not taking money out, that's something you're going to want to avoid. Early closure or prepayment penalties are something else that you want to avoid. Especially too, since it sounds like you're going to be able to pay this line of credit off quickly, you don't want to owe a bank extra money just because you didn't need it for long. So this is an instance where being aware of those fees and also being aware of some of those, you know, promotional discounted rates for a certain amount of time, you could really benefit. Because if you have a plan, you know that you're going to be able to knock that out, say, in 6 months, and they've got this crazy low offer where, you know, it's good for, you know, for 6 to 8 months or something like that, and you know that if y'all really get after it, you could completely wipe that out. The details and the rates and the fees, they make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, and Matt, too, considering their time frame, a HELOC makes a whole lot more sense than a home equity loan, right?
Yes.
And that's because HELOCs are simpler and often can come with fewer fees. The rate on a home equity loan is locked, right? So you know what you're paying over the whole entire life that you have that loan, whereas the rate on a HELOC is floating. And that scares some people to have a floating rate, right? And two, there's a potential that we're going to see rates start to rise. And so taking out a HELOC could feel like a gamble to a lot of folks. And that's why the time horizon is so important when you're determining which one of these products is right for you. It's really important to know your payback period before you make the decision. And since it sounds like you're going to be borrowing a minimal amount of money, Kirby, 10 grand or less, and you'll be able to pay it off in short order, the HELOC is going to be your best bet because you're going to be able to get that joker paid off before your rate starts to tick up in a meaningful way.
All right. Well, Kirby, thanks so much for that question, and we hope we were able to get you pointed in the right direction. Joel, you know, that was a question about a renovation. Right after the break, we're going to get to a question about a full-on brand-new house. Let's hit that one up next.
All right, we're back. We've got a couple more questions left, and I'm really excited about the one we're going to tackle after this one about emergency preparedness on
That's
a budget.
Right.
But this next one is interesting too. How can you use a credit card effectively when you're building a home? That's expensive.
Hey, how to money? Remy from New Brunswick, Canada. I'm just looking for the best credit cards to optimize for either points or cash back. My wife and I will be building our new home this summer, and we're looking to get the best bang for our buck. We were also wondering if we should consider an extremely high limit on a specific card. I guess we're just looking for your thoughts on this and trying to optimize in the next coming months. And I guess if you want to try a beer in New Brunswick, I recommend a Tire Shack Full Service Double IPA. It's simply the best double you'll ever have.
Remy, thanks for your question, and we appreciate that beer recommendation as well. That's not a brewery I've ever even heard of, let alone had. And also, congrats on building a new home. That's definitely exciting. Or maybe we should actually say, like, we're sorry that you have to go through this.
So many decisions to make. So much pain, yeah. too, in the process,
I mean,
right?
Yeah, well, it's cool. It's fun to build your own place, but it can definitely be daunting. I mean, and we've only gone through a major renovation a few years ago. So, Remy, let's go ahead and get to your question. And, you know, like, truly, across the board, the best cashback credit cards are going to be the Citi Double Cash and the Fidelity Rewards Visa Signature Card. We'll link to both of those in the show notes, but those are the only two cards that we know of, at least at this point, that offer a straight up 2% cash back on every single purchase that you make. And also, there is no limit on what you can earn. So sometimes there will be certain cards, like I'm a huge fan of the Blue Cash Preferred Amex card, where you get 6% on groceries. Except that, and it's certainly a great thing, but you are still limited to the amount that you can earn, you know, with that benefit, with that 6%. And so what's great about these two cards is that there's no limit. It's 2% no matter how much you spend that year.
And when you're building a home, you're going to spend a lot of money.
Yes.
So the no limit thing is important, right? And also too, Remy, it's important to consider sign-up bonuses. Those cards, the ones that Matt just mentioned, are perfect for everyday purchases, but there could be other ways of maximizing your rewards because you're spending a lot right now, right? So we would say pay attention to the sign-up bonuses that you can snag. If you hit a certain spend level each month, just buying tile for your bathrooms alone could net you a bonus of $500 to $750. So check out some of those. We'll link to some of the cards paying the top bonuses right now in the show notes as well. And if you're going to be spending a lot of money at one of the big home improvement retailers, consider signing up for their credit card also, because that could reward you even more effectively than some of the other stuff we've been talking about.
That's right. Yeah, I think this would be the only time that we would basically recommend like a store card, which is essentially what the Lowe's card is. But that's a credit card that they offer, and they give you a flat 5% off every purchase every day, which is pretty awesome if you're going to be spending a lot of money there. This is a card that I actually might sign up for. I mean, like, Lowe's is the closest hardware store to us, in between just money that we spend outside, you know, on the garden, house stuff, but then rentals as well. I mean, it could definitely be worth it for me.
I go to Lowe's more than I'd like to.
Same here. Oftentimes, multiple times in the same day, which is the worst,
I'm
know?
Man, I'd be like, dang it. How did I buy the wrong size of that? And I got to go return and get something else.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, speaking of the big box stores, Home Depot will extend the return window to a year if you pay with its card. So that's a little benefit there. But do be careful, you know, when you are using any of these credit cards, because the things that you'll be putting on the card, they're going to add up over the months, and you don't want to get used to putting your purchases on it if you can't pay them in full, if you are carrying a balance. That's something you want to avoid.
So, Remy, best of luck to you building this home. It's going to be super fun, also really stressful and really expensive. But hopefully you can at least maximize your rewards so that it costs you a little bit less.
Emotionally, it'll feel a little bit better.
Exactly, exactly. All right, Matt, let's get to our last question of this episode. This one is about prepping on a budget.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Lauren from Salt Lake City. In the past year and a half, we have experienced wildfires, an earthquake, a pandemic, and having our first baby. After all of that, I feel a need to be more prepared in case of an emergency. I would like to have some kind of grab-and-go bag in case we need to leave quickly. However, I'm finding that this stuff can get really expensive for hopefully spending its life just sitting in a closet. My question is, what are your tips for spending money wisely on things like this that hopefully I'll never have to use? Thanks.
Hey, Lauren, we are so sorry for all that you've experienced this year. You know, it makes a lot of sense that you're going to want to, you know, take steps to be a little more prepared when it comes to, you know, maybe it's fleeing your home or just being prepared for some of these natural disasters. It's an important question to be asking because, yeah, like, emergency preparedness can become expensive and it can become this sort of never ending cascade of expenses if you decide to, you know, go further down that rabbit hole.
I know that from personal experience with family members. They got maybe a little into the prepping lifestyle,
yeah.
And it can be expensive to get into that in a big way.
It's true. We won't give details, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah, there's actually this 99% Invisible episode about bunkers not too long ago folks are like building out missile silos and creating like these, you know, condos and like they're almost like resorts but they happen to be underground.
Resorts for the end times.
Exactly. It's super fascinating. Yeah, folks can go overboard preparing for something that's impossible to be 100% prepared for. So, you know, while it's wise to be prepared and to be prepped to some degree, we would recommend that you just don't overdo it.
Yeah, Matt, I'm kind of, I think I've mentioned on the show before, I'm like averse to safety planning or safety in general. Like, it just doesn't cross my mind.
Of a planner. Here's a way that you and I are a little bit different, because I do think about like the worst case scenarios, and I'm like, okay, I don't go crazy, but I do want to make sure that I'm prepared.
Yeah, and I just assume that everything's going to go well, and so I don't plan for that kind of stuff, and sometimes it frustrates my wife. But I feel like, interestingly enough, COVID made me realize that prepping wasn't as stupid of an idea as I previously thought. I feel like when grocery stores were out of stock on items like toilet paper and eggs, it kind of made me think that I should maybe be a little more prepared in the future.
You're like, those are my two favorite things.
If I can't get either, why is life worth living?
And now we're out.
Exactly. And I think for a lot of folks, that might mean that they wanted to get a chicken coop and a handful of chickens in their backyard, or maybe like, you know, growing a small plot of vegetables so that you would always have something that you were making yourself, that you were growing yourself, that you could eat, that could sustain you. And being able to sustain yourself, at least to a small degree, on your own land, I think is admirable and helpful. And it's something that I wouldn't have really given much credence to, given much thought to, if it hadn't been for kind of what happened, you know, in the wake of COVID with supply chain issues.
Yeah, that's true. And so, Lauren, you know, especially if you live in a place like, I mean, it sounds like you do, like you've had to, you know, you've dealt with wildfires, right? But if you're prone to a place that has natural disasters like earthquakes or hurricanes, or maybe you live in the Midwest, you know, where there's a lot of tornadoes, for other listeners out there, you should definitely have some non-perishables, you know, at the ready if something happens. It's also helpful to have like flashlights, batteries, you know, blankets, first aid kits, things like that. Obviously, it's good to always have like bottled water. We always have a bunch of bottled waters in the back of our van. But it depends on your personal situation. And Lauren, you know, you mentioned too how y'all have a new baby. You know, having kids definitely exposes you and opens you up to a little bit more risk. You know, like as a father of four, I'm realizing that like day to day. And I've kind of moved into that direction as well, where like I've got a bag now where I've got a first aid kit in there, and I just keep little things because the kids get hurt and they're bleeding, and oftentimes it's not major, but depending on your situation and if you have dependents, you know, if you've got a baby, formula, these are different things that you're going to want to make sure you have on hand to make sure that you're prepared in case a situation like this arises.
True. I think too, though, Matt, we would say don't overspend out of fear.
Right.
And like, you could opt for the 1 year stash of food that has a 30-year shelf life from Costco.
That's a thing.
I think it's $5,000 though in order to get that. Seriously? So there's some people that, you know, some people would maybe build their own root cellar and start canning stuff and sticking it down there, or you could just go the easy button and get the $5,000 food from Costco. But you're not preparing for the zombie apocalypse, so that would be overkill, right? Although I will say Costco has a pretty cool $100 backpack that claims to get you through 72 hours.
Nice.
So, you know.
Little bug out bag kind of thing.
Right, yeah. But really, you can get a bunch of the things you might need from the dollar store instead of even getting it from Costco. FEMA recommends having supplies that are going to last you three days. You know, other people would suggest 7 days. It's helpful to have some cash on hand too, Matt, we would say, like maybe a couple $100 or so in different denominations. But the more you do research on this, the more you might be tempted to continue spending and to buy more and more stuff. And so set a limit. Say, I'm going to get a 3-day supply or a 5-day supply, and create a list that's defined of the things that you might need in a potential emergency, and refuse to go beyond that, because you can always add more stuff and always spend more money. Also, too, we'd suggest going to ready.gov. They've got some great information on emergency preparedness, but just know that you don't have to break the bank in order to have some peace of mind, and not just peace of mind, but actual supplies at the ready in case something were to happen.
Yeah, that's right. We'll make sure to link to that page there at ready.gov. And I'll link to the, I came across this article when I was putting together my first aid kit from like The Bump, which is like one of those websites for, you know, pregnant couples as they're kind of going through the whole pregnancy thing. But they had a good article up there for putting together a first aid kit when you've got toddlers, or, you know, when you have babies, that kind of thing. But I mean, in the end, what Lauren's going to have to do here is like, do a cost benefit analysis. You know, like she's going to have to look at the money that she has on hand. And, you know, when does it make sense to start paring back? Because if somebody has the money on hand and they want to go for 7 days, go for 30 days worth of supplies, I'm not necessarily going to be one to tell them that they shouldn't do that. It depends on the amount of peace of mind that it brings them, and why we don't want people living out of fear. At the same time, if they're kind of into that, and there, a lot of people are, you know, like they're kind of attracted to the idea of being, you know, self-sufficient and have the ability to be off the grid for a month. And if you're in a solid enough financial position to be able to do that, then I say more power to you. But it just kind of depends on the individual person. It comes down to, your family.
Yeah, but that fancy missile silo bunker might be overkill. You don't need that. You don't need that.
Probably. Maybe. I don't. Yeah.
Maybe somebody does, but I don't want that.
Yeah, me neither.
All right. Lauren, I hope that helps. Best of luck to you as you're preparing, and hopefully you never have to use the stuff that you buy right now.
That's the other thing. And that's what makes it so difficult, too, is she says, hopefully it's not something we need. And in that sense, it's a lot like insurance.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like,
I think
okay,
life insurance, right?
Yes. It's like, this is something I am paying for. I hope we never have to use it or use it anytime soon. But it's there just in case. It's there for that peace of mind.
Exactly. All right. But I know a lot of our listeners have had that question. Like, how much can you spend on that? How much should you spend? And if you're not careful, you can spend too much. All right, Matt, let's get back to the beer that we had on this episode. This one is called Baked Goods. It's a blackberry lemon cobbler sour given to us by the fine folks over at Atlanta Brewing Company. What were your thoughts on this beer, man?
It's really good, man. Yeah, when we poured it, the first thing you notice is that, you know, the beer is stained with the color of blueberries. Obviously, it's not purple or blue like the color of blueberry skins, but it does have like that kind of pinkish orange hue to it. But yeah, this is a really nicely balanced beer. Nice fruit, nice lemon zest going on with, you know, some of that blueberry flavor as well. I find myself drawn to some of the blueberry sours that we've had on, and this one isn't an exception. I like it. But yeah, what are your thoughts?
So I feel like when it comes to dessert beers, often I'm a bit skeptical because sometimes there are too many ingredients tossed in there. And especially because this was a sour version of like a baked good, oftentimes they're stouts, right? With like pastry stouts or you know, they got coconut and other kind of flavors infused into a stout that's trying to taste like a baked good. And I was like, a sour baked good? How's this one gonna pan out? But man, I thought it was really, really nice. The blueberry, the lemon, the cobbler, you kind of got hints of every single one of those notes. So it actually kind of tasted like that. And so this one was balanced and delicious at the same time. Atlanta Brewing Company, especially their limited releases, man, they've gotten really solid.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think what you maybe liked about this is that it wasn't overly sweet, you know?
Yeah.
And so like it was a kind of a dessert beer, but it was a sour. So it still had those flavors without being too heavy. And like I personally thought it had a ton of like that cobbler note going on. Like on the tail end, like the aftertaste was like a really, really chewy wheatiness. It made me feel like I was actually crunching out on a pastry, you know, like that's totally what this beer left me with, you know, after the initial tartness was gone. But yeah, agreed. Very good beer. And I'm glad that you and I got to enjoy one of these on the show today.
No doubt. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks that want the show notes, including a lot of the links that we mentioned, we'll have those up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And so Joel, until next time,
best friends out.
Best friends out.